Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 6, Text Numbers 37 and 38. What we heard yesterday was about Maitreya's acknowledgement of his limitations. If he's limited, what to speak of ourselves? But tiny jiva, however qualified, how can the tiny jiva adequately describe the unlimited? How can the limited adequately describe the unlimited? The answer is you can't. But he did so according to what he heard and had assimilated, and he reproduced that sound vibration to the best of his ability, and by so doing he was acting like a chaste follower as opposed to an unchaste person who doesn't follow. And by engaging in that activity, which is to the best of our ability, describing from what we've heard the activities of the personality of Godhead, that's the best use of our speaking capacity, and it engages us in the internal potency of the Lord. Now we're going to hear about the ears. That's the speaking capacity. Here's text number 37. The highest perfectional gain of humanity is... What's that? To engage in the discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor, with capital P, capital A, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by the greatly learned sages that the actual purpose of the ear is served just by being near them. Near them means those messages, or the persons who are vibrating those messages. That's just like we have Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. What's that verse from the second chapter? Nashta Prayeshu Avadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. The inauspicious things of the heart are cleansed by these two processes: hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is, serving the Srimad Bhagavatam by hearing it, and serving the persons who vibrate it. The message of the Bhagavatam. So, similarly, if we the activities and the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just by hearing them, the perfection of the ear is achieved. That is, the impurity, the contamination that comes from hearing mundane sound vibrations, just a social comment. One of the things I don't like about riding in cars is, in city traffic, is when you stop at a stoplight and the car this side or that side are right in front of you, behind you, and they've got this loud music that's so loud the whole car is like rap music. Even you close the windows and, you know, put in your earplugs, it's that the car is moving, boom, 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 anger, anger, and screaming and yelling, and call it music. And can you imagine the consciousness of the person that's hearing that all day long? And these people, they know the lyrics. It's not like just, you know, loud noise. They sing along with the rapper. Like it's their culture. Anger, anger, screaming, and that's what their consciousness is, that sound vibration. Violent. So, the perfection of the ear is that it's engaged in these transcendental topics. Then it can be said in two ways. One of the terminologies, or one of the names of the Lord, is Uttama Shloka. You know what that means, Uttama Shloka? Uttama means topmost. You know what Shloka means, right? What's Shloka mean? You know, like, can you recite a shloka from Bhagavad Gita? Sarva dharmam pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja. You know that one? Janma karma chime divyam. You know that one? Do you know one shloka from Bhagavad Gita? By this evening, you learned one shloka from Bhagavad Gita, okay? Okay. So a shloka means like a verse. A recitation, Krishna speaking, and when Krishna speaks, it's a shloka, or these are shlokas from Srimad Bhagavatam, a verse. So Uttama shloka is those verses describing the supreme personality of Godhead. The topmost shlokas are also describing the topmost person, Uttama shloka. He who is described by choice poetry. Sometimes Uttama Shloka is translated that way. So as the person, so also the glorification of the person. Like we heard yesterday, if we engage in this chaste activity of glorifying the Supreme Lord, because the glorification of the Supreme Lord is not different than the Lord, and we're engaged in that glorification, we become part of the paraphernalia of the Lord. The Lord and topics about Him are non-different, and the person who engages in hearing or describing those topics also becomes non-different. Just by contact. You contact electricity and you become electrified. Somebody touches you and they get electrified. Because you're touching electricity. We become the carrier of that spiritual potency by speaking or hearing it. So, Prabhupada writes, the word guna vadam is significant because the qualities of the Lord and His activities and pastimes are the subject matter of the discussions of the devotees. Then Prabhupada, in each of these verses, I'm noticing that the verse isn't directly connected with speaking against the conception of impersonalism, but Prabhupada is rarely missing an opportunity to speak against impersonalism. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyasyadikshatarini. His pranam mantra as a fitting glorification, because he's so strong about personalism, or cautioning us against impersonalism. So the impersonalist he writes, they're very much afraid of hearing of the activities of the Lord. They're afraid. Why? Because they think that the happiness derived from the transcendental situation of Brahman is the ultimate goal of life, and conversely, anyone's activity, including the personality of Godhead, is mundane. So it will take them away from Brahma Nirvana. So they don't want to hear Krishna Katha. They purposely avoid hearing Krishna Katha. They might become attracted, so that would be terrible if they became attracted. Because they think it's mundane, because their view is there's only one thing. And that one thing is Brahman, and anything other than Brahman is going to attract them, take them away from Brahman. So they don't want. So they don't hear. On the other hand, the devotee transcendentalist, they want to hear. And they don't want to hear other things about mundane activity, pastime, philosophy, ways of looking at things, minus God, there's no interest. Then he goes to, so this is a third position. There's the materialist, there's the impersonalist, but there's a third position. The position of the devotee is also not interested in mundane things. What does Maitreya Rishi have interest in mundane things? He doesn't have interest in mundane things, but he's very interested in this subject matter. Although it's about creation, and that's material, it's of this world, not transcendental, but he's very interested. He's spending lots of time explaining it to the best of his ability. Why? Because it's in relation to the personality of Godhead. A rishi like Maitreya is certainly not interested in discussing anything pertaining to mundane qualities, and yet, he says, that the highest perfectional stage of transcendental realization is to discuss the Lord's activities. This is very similar to a question that comes in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where Shukadeva Goswami, first, Vyasadeva has his meditation, he has his realization under the order of Narada. He sees the Supreme Lord, he sees the living entity, he sees the material energy, he understands the circumstance, and he then begins compiling Srimad Bhagavatam to explain all of that. And then he later taught it to Shukadeva Goswami. And then the sages say, wait, he taught it to Shukadeva Goswami? Why is Shukadeva Goswami studying anything? He's already realized. He's perfected. People study things because they need to advance and benefit. But he's already at the realized stage. Why does he have to study anything? Or learn anything or hear anything? Why doesn't he just pay no attention to things that are mundane? And the answer is, he pays attention to things that are transcendental, verifying that the Srimad Bhagavatam is fully transcendental, because he's not interested in anything mundane, as Maitreya is also not interested in anything mundane, but very interested in this subject matter, although it's about creation. He goes on. Srila Jiva Goswami therefore concludes that topics regarding the transcendental activities of the Lord are far beyond the transcendental realization of Kaivalya happiness. This is Jiva Goswami's commentary. When you hear this word Kaivalya, what does it mean when you hear it? What do you think of when you hear Kaivalya? Anyone? Impersonal liberation, yeah. There, their doctrine, Shankaracharya's doctrine, is absolute monism. What's the word? Something. Kevala Advaita, yeah. Kevala Advaita. So Kaivalya absolute there isn't any other thing, just one thing, monism, Brahman. So realization of that is Kaivalya. And Jiva Goswami is saying that the stage of attraction to Krishna Katha, or the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, the topics of Hari, Hari Katha, it's beyond the Kaivalya stage of realization. The devotee isn't interested in that. Kaivalya, Kaivalya Nara Kayate, Akash Pushpaya. What is the verse? Yeah. The Prabodhananda Saraswati has written that the devotees are not interested in bhukti or mukti. They're not interested in sense gratification up to the heavenly planets. They look upon it as no more meaningful than flowers in the sky. Pushpa Akash. Is there such a thing as flowers in the sky?
No.
Have you ever seen any flowers in the sky? It's imagination, right? Flowers in the sky. So Akasha. Pushpa means flowers. Akash means sky. Pushpa Akash is something that doesn't exist. So the happiness of attaining the heavenly planets and enjoying ephemeral pleasures has no more meaning than flowers in the sky. Or another one is sometimes horse eggs. There's eggs, and there's horses, but there's not horse eggs. There's no such thing. So there's no substance to the concept of happiness in the whole three worlds. So the devotees aren't interested. And as far as Kaivalya liberation, they consider it to be hellish. Naraka, or hell. Because there you can't serve Krishna. Go to a place where you can't serve Krishna. It's like the rule, you can't serve Krishna. No, that's hellish. Being deprived of service to Krishna. So whatever that happiness is of cessation of material illusion, the relief of cessation of material illusion, Kaivalya, it's not attractive to the devotee, even if offered. Not only no thank you, but awful. I can't serve Krishna. So the writings, the last two sentences, the writings themselves that are describing these activities, Maitreya is speaking them, or as he's saying, the literatures that are composed by great sages describing them, they're very sublime. They're transcendentally attractive. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, his concluding sentence, is one of such great literatures. And the highly perfectional stage of life is attained simply by hearing and reciting its contents. So what we're doing right now, it's very simple. We're in a living room with a bunch of sheets on the floor and children drawing and things like that. The activity itself, in principle, is an activity that can lead one to the perfectional stage of life. It's attractive for paramahamsas, those on the topmost stage, and it's beneficial if somehow we can become attracted, even those of us in the lowest stage. In the preface to Srimad Bhagavatam, it's in every volume. Prabhupada quotes this one verse from First Canto, Chapter 5. Tadvag visargo janata aghaviplavo yasmin pratishlokim abhadyavatsvapi. In that verse he's saying that although there may be mistakes or flaws or errors in the composition of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Narada speaking to Vyas. Don't worry, Vyas. Compile the Srimad Bhagavatam, even if there's some grammatical or other mistakes, because the subject matter itself is transcendental. Those who contact it will receive transcendental benefit. Same thing that Maitreya is saying. I'm tiny and insignificant. I'm trying to describe the unlimited, although I'm limited. So what can I do? But because the subject matter itself is transcendental, it's beneficial to me and it's beneficial to others. One who speaks it and one who hears it. Just stay as best one can to being faithful to the subject matter, or present simply the subject matter to your capacity. And it's transcendentally beneficial. It leads to the perfectional stage of life. The activity itself is the perfectional stage of life, or the perfection of life, perfection of hearing and speaking and using of our vitality, our human energy. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is that literature, or the cream of such literature. The next verse addresses something similar. Here's a trivia question. How long did Lord Brahma undergo his austerities before he had his special realization?
1,600
Yeah, exactly. That's what it says in the verse. Text 38. O my son, this is Maitreya speaking to Vidura. Vidura's hardly a boy. He's, you know, as old as Dhritarashtra was, almost. He's of ripe age, but by spiritual realization, he's a son to Maitreya. So, O my son. The original poet, Adi Kavi, Lord Brahma, after mature meditation for 1,000 celestial years, could know only that the glories of the Supreme Soul are inconceivable. Very nice. So, if the original learned person attained the realization after 1,000 celestial years, that's a lot of time. I mean, Prabhupada would often speak that time in the heavenly realm and time in this realm is so vastly different. One day in the heavenly realm is 6 months here, and one night is another 6 months, so one day and night is 1 year. So one day and one night times 365 times 1,000, that's how long Brahma did his austerity. And so we can't even like calculate. So, and what was the realization? Realization was the glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. So we can take it for granted. The glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. And what can we do? Maitreya is saying, what can we do to express them? It's on the same theme. It's we hear, we assimilate, we present again that same sound vibration according to our capacity. And by that very process is the process that will elevate us gradually, purifying our mind, purifying our senses, in giving spiritual strength, giving spiritual capacity, and gradually going to a greater level, or greater, again, capacity of expressing the glories of the Lord. But however far you go, up to Lord Brahma, 1,000 celestial years, the realization is, I'm limited, and the unlimited is unlimited. Guess what Prabhupada speaks about in the purport? the frog in the well. He loved that metaphor, or used it so many times. And somehow he picked the Pacific Ocean. So there's the frog in the well, and someone comes to tell him, "Oh, Mr. Frog, Dr. Frog, you have a big well here, but there's a body of water that's so many times bigger than this, the Pacific Ocean." "Really? How big?" "Much bigger." "Twice as big?" "Three times as big?" No, much bigger. Because it's beyond his experience, he can't imagine something that's so vast that it's inconceivable. But the nature of the personality of Godhead is not knowable by speculation or Dr. Frog philosophy. Then he, next paragraph is the Brahma Samhita verse, where one can speculate for millions of years and still the Absolute is far beyond. Pantasta koti satavatsara sampagamyo vayora tapi. So he didn't give the verse, he just summarizes. However, although the mind can't accommodate reaching the Absolute, one can receive that message by descending process and through the agency of devotional service and contact with great souls, just as the previous verse is saying, just by hearing, by being in proximity of those persons and the messages, then one can understand to some degree that which is otherwise inconceivable, which is what we're doing. It's our process in devotional service. The last paragraph, he's referring to the Mahatmanas Tumam Partha Daivim Prakritim Ashrita verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9. The pure devotees of the Lord take shelter of Para Prakriti, or the internal potency of the Lord, called Lakshmi Devi, Sita Devi, Srimati Radharani, or Srimati Rukmini Devi. And thus they become actual Mahatmas or great souls. Mahatmas are not found fond of indulging in mental speculations, but they actually take to the devotional service of the Lord without the slightest deviation. The devotional service of the Lord begins with the hearing process, and it is advanced further by the hearing process, and many practical activities follow that hearing. We receive, and then we internalize, shrinvanti, gayanti, grananti sadavaha. We carry that message within our heart, and then we engage ourselves accordingly, and that message is then resonating in our heart, and it becomes our being, becomes who we are. That means the message of the Bhagavatam becomes the person Bhagavatam by that assimilation process. And the connection with Krishna, the connection with the vibrators of that message of Krishna, is within our hearts. It's becomes our life. There's no separation between our life and that message by that system. And that way, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita, one takes shelter of the internal potency. The internal potency guides your life. One's activities become simply an expression of the message. One becomes a walking Bhagavatam just by your actions of life. You exemplify the teachings. Prabhupada, I had an international conference call this morning early, and I was repeating something from the Gita Nagari prophecy When Srila Prabhupada was a householder, before he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was one of the leading followers of Mahatma Gandhi. After Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took shelter of Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching, and his involvement in the Gandhi movement waned and diminished. But by the time Mahatma Gandhi, his funeral took place, Srila Prabhupada was requested to be a principal speaker on that occasion of his funeral ceremony. So he prepared an essay which was spoken, or parts of it were spoken, at the time of Gandhi's funeral. And Prabhupada was saying, the way to honor a great person after their departure is not just by building a monument for them, or putting a statue in the public park, or naming a building after them, or naming a street after them, which is commonly done. Rather, Prabhupada said, is the way to honor a great person is to create a living community of persons who exemplify the very values that that great personality held. When one can do that, you have properly honored that person. Then he said, everybody knows that Mahatma Gandhi very much revered Bhagavad Gita. So if you want to honor Mahatma Gandhi, then you should establish a living example of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, persons who actually embody what the teachings of Bhagavad Gita are. And then he described a village, and he gave it a name. Gitanagari was the name that he gave. And in this village where the Gita is heard and revered and people live by it, then he described what would go on in that place. One of the things that he, a phrase that he used in that, it's now within ISKCON known as the Gitanagari prophecy, because there was a time when it was like the Pennsylvania farm, and then 1975 or 6, Srila Prabhupada agreed to ride in one of the Radha Damodar buses from New York to the Pennsylvania farm. In the course of that bus ride, many things happened, but Prabhupada gave the name, Gitanagari. Nobody knew about this manuscript or this essay. He found out about it later because it was in his in a trunk somewhere in Calcutta, managing Lane property of an apartment where Prabhupada had stayed for some time and kept some things. So it was in that trunk, and it was never published. Then they found the manuscript, that essay that he wrote for... Anyway, so hospital of the heart is a phrase that Prabhupada used for, and Bhaktitirtha Swami amplified a lot, the hospital of the heart, where the impurity, it's very similar to the, this Bhagavatam message here, the impurities of heart, what the soul resonates with, what the soul is and does, comes out. What's in comes out. And if the soul can become purified by this process of hearing and chanting, and then our activity will follow where our heart is. So first is the hospital of the heart, making the heart fit and clean and pure, so that our activities can be fit and clean and pure by the hearing and chanting process. And then living according to the teaching, the message. Then you carry the message. Your life becomes that message. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. These impersonalist people who seek this impersonal liberation, like they are Brahman concepts, so how do they go to the higher realm? Because they don't have any personal concept, or they don't want to hear any Krishna Katha, or no association with devotees. So how do they get to the higher or lower kind of thing?
Well, there's two things. One is they may get the mercy of a devotee, and they may not. If they get the mercy of a devotee and they receive it, properly accept it, then they can go beyond their impersonal conception and the impersonal platform. But alternatively, they may not. So what the Bhagavatam teaches us is they if they achieve perfection, and that's a big if they achieve perfection, then they enter into the Brahman effulgence, after some time become eager for activity again, but there's no shelter in the spiritual conception of the personality of Godhead. So they fall from that. Aruya Krishchena Parampadam Tada Patantiado. Or another possibility is they can just continue over a period of many lifetimes striving for that perfection, which they may never attain. So another is they may just resume worldly activity. And that's the most common, which Prabhupada writes and describes, and it happens. People go with this Kaivalya conception to some remote place and austerities, and then they come back down the mountain to the village or the city and open hospitals and do philanthropy and become very highly acclaimed by the worldly population. Oh, this great sadhu is doing such nice work. And meanwhile, their teaching is impersonal, but their behavior is worldly. So the greatest fortune is what's being described here, hearing, getting the opportunity to hear, getting association of a devotee that can speak properly the message of the Bhagavatam, the message of transcendence. Anything else? Okay. Well, thank you all for coming so early in the morning with your busy days ahead of you. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.